news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Crowds gathered in Tulsa, Oklahoma on Monday to mark the 100th anniversary of the city's 1921 race massacre, in which white mobs killed as many as 300 black people and destroyed 35 square blocks of a prosperous community, the Greenwood District in Tulsa, which became known as Black Wall Street. Black World War I veterans fought to defend the neighborhood against white attackers, many of whom were deputized and armed by the city. Adding insult to extreme injury, the city and the state denied the massacre for decades. President Biden declared a day of remembrance before visiting on Tuesday, as excavation resumes on a mass grave possibly connected to the massacre. In conjunction with the trip, the Biden administration Tuesday morning announced initiatives designed to close the racial wealth gap. They include a proposed rule by Housing and Urban Development to counter discriminatory housing practices, as well as an effort to address inequities in home appraisals. The administration is also planning to increase the share of federal contracts that go to small disadvantaged businesses to 50% over the next 5 years. The White House says that will provide an additional $100 million to those businesses. On Monday, Memorial Day, President Biden paid tribute to the nation's war dead at Arlington National Cemetery, laying a wreath and calling fallen service members the soul of America. Biden was joined by First Lady Jill Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, where Biden called on Americans to remember those who gave their lives to protect U.S. democracy and to rise above partisan division. It was an unusual statement for a Memorial Day observation, but in these times, necessary.
Democracy itself is in peril. Here at home and around the world, what we do now, how we honor the memory of the fallen will determine whether or not democracy will long endure. Democracy thrives when the infrastructure of democracy is strong. When people have the right to vote freely and fairly and conveniently, when a free and independent press pursues the truth founded on facts, not propaganda, when the rule of law applies equally and fairly to every citizen, regardless of where they come from, what they look like.
President Biden obviously needed to sound that alarm, as one particularly loud and misinformed contingent seems to be slipping further from the grasp of reality. For instance, take Michael Flynn, who served briefly as the former guy's first national security advisor. During a QAnon event in Dallas, Flynn appeared to express support for a Myanmar-style coup in the United States.
I want to know why what happened in Myanmar can't happen here.
No reason. I mean, it should happen here. No reason. Right? That's right.
No reason, he said. I mean, it should happen here? Those comments obviously sparked an uproar and condemnation from both sides of the aisle. So, of course, on Monday, in a post on the social media platform Telegram, Flynn backtracked on his comments and wrote, "Let me be very clear. In caps, there is no reason whatsoever for any coup in America, and I do not and have not at any time called for any action of that sort." He continued, "Any reporting of any other belief by me is a bold-faced fabrication based on twisted reporting at a lively panel at a conference of patriotic Americans who love this country just as I do." And he keeps going. Listen for the gaslighting. It's epic. "I am no stranger to media manipulating my words, and therefore let me repeat my response to a question asked at the conference. There is no reason it, a coup, should happen here, in parentheses, in America." Wow, Mikey, gaslighting much? Let's listen again to what he actually said.
"I want to know why what happened in Myanmar can't happen here."
It's Myanmar.
"No reason. I mean, it should happen here. No reason." That's right.
Yeah, he agreed with the questioner to say there's no reason it shouldn't happen here. Who's calling what fake? Okay, moving right along. Texas made news over the holiday weekend, and not in a good way. The Lone Star State has become the next battleground in the voting rights fight after state Democrats successfully derailed a new restrictive voting bill by walking off the floor late Sunday night. That action left the Republican majority without the quorum they needed to do any business, including approving the bill, before the midnight deadline. Now, that bill would have made mail-in voting more difficult. It would have banned early voting on Sunday mornings as an obvious attempt to derail the very popular Souls to the Polls. And it would prohibit local election officials from sending out absentee ballot applications to anyone who has not specifically requested one. The measure may be dead for now, but Governor Greg Abbott made it clear that he's not backing down. He said Monday that he'd withhold state lawmakers' pay for walking out. Oh, come on. States like Georgia and Florida have already passed similarly restrictive voting measures based on falsehoods promoted by the former guy that the outcome of the 2020 presidential election was somehow fraudulent. Democrats called on Congress and President Biden to counter state attempts to restrict voting rights. Something's got to be done. And although the losers are trying to paint our electoral system as broken, let's look at Israel. It only took Netanyahu losing at the polls three times in a row, or was it four? Either way, Benjamin Netanyahu's 12-year tenure as Prime Minister of Israel could finally be coming to an end. With three previous failed attempts by others to form a new government, it looks like fourth time is a charm. Now, two political rivals announced that they're working toward forming a new government in the Knesset, that's Israel's parliament. Naftali Bennett, the leader of the small right-wing party, Yamina, said that he's working toward a coalition deal with the centrist party leader, Yair Lapid, to avoid a fifth round of elections. If successful, Netanyahu, who faces an ongoing trial on bribery and fraud charges, will be ousted as Israel's longest-serving prime minister. Lapid now needs to reach and sign formal coalition agreements with the eight parties involved. Parliament then has a week to vote on the coalition agreements before the new government and a new Israeli prime minister can be sworn in. The first foreign athletes began arriving in Japan on Tuesday ahead of the Tokyo Olympics, despite intensifying calls to cancel the games due to the ongoing threat of the coronavirus. Among the first to arrive were members of Australia's softball team. They'll remain isolated on three floors of a hotel outside of Tokyo until the games begin on June 23rd. A new poll by the Nikkei newspaper found that 63% of respondents were opposed to going ahead with the games due to the threat that athletes and officials would bring in new strains of the virus from other parts of the world. Stay tuned. Speaking of athletes, tennis star Naomi Osaka withdrew from the French Open on Monday, saying she would, quote, take some time away from the court after being fined $15,000 and threatened with more sanctions because she refused to attend a mandatory press conference after she won in the first round. Osaka wrote a lengthy statement saying she didn't want to be a distraction, so, quote, the best thing for the tournament, the other players, and my well-being is that I withdraw. Wow. The 23-year-old Osaka said that she had struggled with depression after her first big win in 2018 and got, quote, huge waves of anxiety whenever she was forced to speak with the international media. The president of the French Tennis Federation said that the tournament's organizers were sorry and sad for Osaka and wished her the quickest possible recovery. All right, you knew this was coming. Tensions are rising again. Russia said Monday it would send, quote, uncomfortable signals to the United States ahead of next month's scheduled summit between President Biden and Vladimir Putin. The warning came a day after Biden said he'd press Putin to respect human rights at their meeting on June 16th in Geneva. Relations between Washington and Moscow have deteriorated following U.S. allegations of Russian attempts to influence America's elections in 2016 and 2020, and of course that Russian military buildup near Ukraine. And things got really tense over Russia's jailing of opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Russia's deputy foreign minister, Sergei Rybakov, was quoted by the RIA news agency saying Russia would respond to Biden's remarks on human rights. And finally, the United Nations Climate Office in Bonn, Germany, on Monday launched 3 weeks of climate talks. But due to pandemic restrictions, they'll all be virtual meetings. So depending on geography, some participants will be attending sessions either before dawn or late at night. So it's obviously far from ideal, but it is important. Negotiators will focus on rules for international carbon markets, providing aid to developing nations, and other unresolved issues stemming from the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. The talks are seen as a key step in preparing for the UN Climate Summit happening in Glasgow, Scotland in November. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.